We're going to read about Fred and more about alcoholism. And I would say, I read it again today, and I've covered it who knows how many hundreds of times and read it. But when you read the story you see tonight, especially if you're new, it really gives us the whole deal. It tells us why we're here, what's wrong with us, and what we need to do. And so this chapter, more about alcoholism, is designed, especially we probably have some new people here, to understand powerless. Now, a lot of people can verbalize what powerless is, but powerless is you trying to push a 747. It's powerless. And they hammer that home, and they're showing us why we're powerless, so we'll be willing to believe that there is a power that can help us. And that's what we agnostics is about, is God and willing to believe, and then the rest of the steps follow. But if you don't think you're powerless, you're not going to do it. Now, we're not talking about little powerless here. We're talking about complete powerless. And if you were completely defeated, you remember that moment when you were completely powerless. And I remember it. Mark described it so well Sunday night. And I got down on my knees and I asked God to help me. Now here's the deal. I'm still powerless today. But I have a relationship with God. And that's the power we get. A lot of people get confused. They think they're going to come to AA and they're powerless and they're going to get power by getting smart or going to meetings or studying. We get power through the action of the steps. God reveals himself to us. Is this, everybody got that? And then God is the power. No God, no power. It says, you know peace, no peace, no God. You know God, you have peace. So we're going to go to page 39, and then we're going to cover to 43, and I'm going to stop there when we finish with Fred. So you'll give me a break tonight. Before they talk about Fred, they tell us that it may be true that certain non-alcoholic people, top of 39, who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop and moderate. Because, and look at this, their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. So they're telling us right here, we have damaged brains and bodies. Our bodies are damaged because we can't control how much we drink. There's something wrong with us. We want a second drink. Even before we take the first one, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The first one's just to get warmed up, right? And our brains are damaged as well, and they're going to describe why it's damaged. A damaged brain makes the body's damage come into being. If we don't drink, it doesn't matter if we have an allergy, right? If we don't take the first drink, we'll never crave the second one. But we take the first drink. So here, look at this. The actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, and notice this is in squiggly writing, absolutely unable, not just unable, absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. And what they're telling you, how do you stop drinking? You work the steps. They don't say that here. And it says, this is a point we want to emphasize and reemphasize, to smash home upon our readers, and it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. And ask yourself, has it been revealed to you? Now, what does self-knowledge mean? Knowledge of self, understanding yourself enough so that you won't drink. It's not going to happen. I never went to one of these trigger meetings. I'd really like to go. The only trigger for an alcoholic is being awake. And if people could drink in coma, they would. But it's just being awake. Now we're going to talk about Fred, and this is so well written, and there's so much information in it. I hope I do it justice. Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good. He has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. Sounds good, doesn't it? And here I can relate to Fred because he has an attractive personality that he makes friends with everyone. Any other attractive personalities in here? They may be today, but at some point they very were. But he had one. If ever there was a successful businessman, it's Fred. Now that's why they're using this example. He's doing great. His life looks great. To all appearances, the way he looks, he seems very stable, well-balanced. Yet he is an alcoholic. See, we can look good out there. People can think we're okay, but they don't know what's going on inside of here and how we're disturbed. And it says, we first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. I guess he was going through withdrawal. It was his first experience of this kind. And he was much ashamed of it. Anybody ashamed of their behavior at times and what happened to him? So he was ashamed. Far from admitting, he didn't want to admit he was an alcoholic, but he told himself, here's his first problem. He's telling himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. Does that sound like an alcoholic? It probably made sense to him, right? You know, I'm a nervous guy. I need to rest my nerves. Well, why was he need to rest his nerves? Because he's living a self-centered life. He has the spiritual malady. And he's restless, irritable, and discontent. That's why he drank. So to rest his nerves, he's irritable, he's anxious, he worries. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. Unfortunately, that's true. You have to do that sometimes as a physician. In my job, it was very painful because a lot of times the patients, they realize how bad their cancer was. And it was not easy to tell them. But you don't have to worry about telling an alcoholic he's in bad shape because it won't change anything. I mean, you can go up to an alcoholic in the hospital. They've got cirrhosis, they're bleeding, and tell them they're going to die if they drink again. And they'll absolutely say they're done, right? And you know that is not going to matter because they have what Fred has, and they're going to describe it. They don't have any power not to drink again. So he says, for a few days he was depressed about his condition. Were you ever depressed? Now, what was his condition? I don't think he knew. I don't think he understood. He probably didn't really understand his condition. Why do I say that? Because he made up his mind. He's going to quit drinking altogether. It makes sense, right? You're in the hospital. You've got bad nerves. You're having problems with alcohol. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. But his condition was that he didn't know this yet, that he had no power to keep from drinking. Powerless. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so. In spite of his character and standing, never occurred to him that he wouldn't have the ability. He was a very successful guy. That's why they use this example. On the outward appearances, he had everything going for him. He looked great, successful, got everything going, the kids, the family. But here's the deal. He would not, and I also wrote, character and standing is no defense against alcohol. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. Well, if you don't believe yourself an alcoholic, you're not going to work the steps. Now, what's the first step in recovery? Conceding to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. The first of the steps in the program, you admit you're an alcoholic, but you can't, you're powerless over alcohol, right? But you can't admit you're powerless over alcohol until you fully concede you're an alcoholic. And if you don't fully concede you're an alcoholic, then you're not going to look for a spiritual remedy. You're going to look for yourself, right? Anybody do that? We all did that, right? And with some people still do it, even when they're in the program. And then you find out that they relapse. We told him what we knew about alcoholism. They told him what they knew about the disease. He was interested and conceited. See, it's just like Bill W. when he was conceding that Jesus was a great man, right? And that the people who believed in God, they had some good things going for them, and that maybe there was a czar of the heavens. Remember? While he's drunk with Ebby, dying. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. You see, the second part of the first step is why we die. Our lives had become unmanageable, right? By me. And what's the one thing that we could not manage as alcoholics? To keep from drinking. Now, we learned that means a lot of more than just not drinking. It means that we couldn't run our lives successfully in all the areas, and we were in conflict with everyone and everybody. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him sober the rest of his life. And I wrote, humiliation and knowledge won't treat alcoholism. Why? It says on page 24, we cannot recall with sufficient force the memory of humiliation and defeat of even a moment ago, right? And then it says we are without defense against the first drink. It's in italics, and if you have time, read that paragraph, because that paragraph sets the stage for the next page, which says there is a solution. And he thought self-knowledge would fix it. We heard no more of Fred for a while. And people come to AA and they tell us, you know, they're okay, they got it. They know what to do. They'll know when the certain time's gonna come up, and they're prepared. They've got their trigger list. They're gonna pull it out. And it says, we heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told that he was back in the hospital. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story, and I think he's probably defeated now. The story he told is most instructive. For here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. So that what they're telling you is conviction, no excuse, splendid judgment and determination will not treat alcoholism. Let him tell you about it. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink. What is the subtle insanity that precedes the first drink? The subtle insanity is that your mind tells you you could take a drink and it's going to be okay. It must be, or we wouldn't do it. And he's going to go on and he sees it in himself. Why can't I tell myself right before I drink that I didn't want to drink? Because willpower won't work. Why won't it work? Because right before you want to drink, you're only going to think about what it's going to do for you, not to you. Now think about that. In fact, most people feel better just going to the liquor store on the way. They start getting excited. Drug addicts know that. They're getting, the pills are coming. They know it's coming. They feel better already because they know the relief is on the way. And once you're seeking that relief, nothing can stop it. We have no human power can relieve us of this. But I was confident it could not, and he was confident in himself. It doesn't say that. But he was confident in Fred. Now we need confidence in who? God. And we have confidence in God, and we trust God. Why? Because we're here today, and God's revealed himself to us. And we have faith because we've done the steps, and God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I reasoned I was not so advanced as most of you fellows. See, a lot of people come into AA and they'll tell us at their first meeting they still have a car, they have a job, and you know, things aren't really that bad, or you know, and they want to tell us that they're okay, right? And that's normal. That's normal behavior. We want people to think good of us. And he says that I've been usually successful in linking any of my other personal problems, and I would therefore be successful where you men failed. I think that's why sometimes it's hard to work with smart people. Mm-hmm. Smart alcoholics are difficult to work with. I was one of them. When I realized how wrong I was about everything, then it became easy to do the steps. We're smart about everything that we're wrong about. That makes sense if you think about it. He felt I had every right to be. I felt I had every right to be self-confident. You see, there it is again. He's confident in himself, and I like this. It would be only a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. Now, those are the lies that kill us. We tell ourselves this, we believe it. If you think you can exercise your willpower and keep on guard, then you're not going to seek God. You're not going to seek the spiritual solution. In this frame of mind, he went about my business, and for a time all was well. I had no trouble refusing drinks, and here's where he starts to relapse. I began to wonder if I had not been making too hard work of a simple matter. I see that a lot. People come, their lives are a mess. They're crying. Oh. 30 days, things are looking better. 60, they tell me how great things are going, and then you don't see them. Their ego rebuilds. And they don't lose their ability of being defeated. And he said, one day I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. So things are going well. He's quit drinking. He sees, he understands that he needs to not drink. I'd been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, he felt fine. He had no pressing problems or worries. His business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Now, here's the thing. I cannot make my life perfect enough out there to keep me from drinking. See why this is such a great, powerful example. No matter how great things are out there, it's never good enough. And we always tried to make the world okay out there so we would be okay in here, right? And we made a miserable job of it, didn't we? And then once we tried to be okay in here, then the world out there got better. So he went to the hotel, leisurely dressed for dinner. Now here it is, squiggly writing. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. Now, when he was on the plane to Washington, he wasn't thinking of drinking, right? And when he had the perfect day and the meetings went well, he wasn't thinking of drinking, right? And here's the certain time that he thought he would fix with self-knowledge. And it just happens. So what did he do? It'd be nice to have a couple cocktails. And so he brings into consciousness the idea that he wants a drink. And he couldn't bring into consciousness the idea that he shouldn't drink. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail in my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. Well, it's going well, right? After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me. It just struck him. A highball would be fine before going to bed. That makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. So I stepped in the bar and had one. I remember having several more and plenty the next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxicab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted him about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I'd said and did. And here it is. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering, the humiliation and defeat. The hopeless condition. Now he writes here, it's very well written, as soon as I regained my ability to think. So as soon as he was able to look and get his mind, he went carefully over that evening in Washington. And here's some more squiggly writing. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. Why? Because he had no power to. This is why they're talking about powerless. I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remember what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesized. And this book is really a prophecy. It's a book of prophecy. It's a prophecy in the first 43 pages of Dr. Pinion about what's going to happen unless you do something about this. And it's a prophecy of what's going to happen if you don't do their suggested program of recovery. And they threaten your life, and they say if you don't get rid of your self-centeredness, you're going to die. And they prophesy that if you don't get rid of anger, you're going to die. And so it's a prophecy. They prophesize that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come I would drink. Now, people laugh when I said I was recovered. All recovered means is that I'm not dominated by the obsession to drink today. When I think about alcohol, I can say bad idea. Now, you can be recovered, but that doesn't mean you're cured, and it doesn't mean you can stay recovered unless you keep doing the steps. But I pray today, and I'm here today, and I've been trying to work step 10, and I feel like I'm not going to drink right now. I can see it as a bad idea. So you see what they're talking about when they say they're recovered? Because if you read the foreword, it says the story of how 100 men and women recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. I would drink again. And the books tells you you're going to drink again, but they don't say it like that. Maybe they should rewrite it again. I don't know. Probably not. They say we have no defense against the first drink. And what that means is you will drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Now, after they did gym, they talked about sound reasoning. Parallel with sound reasoning will come this other reasoning that will tell you it's okay to drink, and then some trivial excuse will come, and then it will outpower the sound reasoning. And we covered that, and I'm not going to review again. I told Jimmy I wouldn't. Well, just then that did happen, and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I didn't even think about it, right? I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. An alcoholic mind means you can't see the truth about alcohol. Now, when we read Working with Others, it says you can go anywhere their alcohol is served as long as you don't have an alcoholic mind. If you still have an alcoholic mind, then it's dangerous. But if you have a fit spiritual condition, you can go anywhere. I knew from that moment an alcoholic mind, I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. That's what he called it. They call it the queer mental twist. This thing that we all have in back here, and part of our brain is damaged. And it cannot be fixed. There's no pill that's going to fix that. Therapy won't fix that. Nothing will fix that except God. God, when that thing is triggered, that thought, God will say, bad idea. It said, I'd never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. So two guys from AA came to see me and they grinned. Right? We hear this story and we're just laughing. You know, he's dying, but we think it's pretty funny. And we're laughing tonight, which I didn't like so much. And then asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I was really licked. See, that's, some people say, the big book says you're not supposed to tell anybody they're an alcoholic. That's not true. They told AA number 3 was an alcoholic. They say we don't like to tell anybody that, but we like them to decide themselves, and then Dr. Bob would ask him, are you done for good and all? Are you completely licked this time? It's hard to tell. The way you can tell if somebody's completely licked is because they'll do the things you tell them to do, and they'll start following directions, and they'll ask you, what do they do next? I had to concede both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as I had exhibited in Washington was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. That's a pretty good way of describing complete surrender, right? Snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. So you could ask, are you snuffed out? Then they outlined, then they told him the spiritual answer and program of action. They talked about the book after the book was written, remember? They didn't talk about meetings and fellowship, which is important, but they talked about the spiritual answer as a result of the program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Remember, this was written in 1939. There wasn't really any formal AA. There were three meetings in the United States, a total of about 100 people. Though I had been only a nominal churchman, now remember, he realizes he has a hopeless condition. Their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. So here he's admitting he's hopeless, and then he says, this is pretty drastic. You see how it's hard for us to completely let go that we have any plan that's going to fix this. Remember, it says on page 25, none of us like this course of action, right? So it meant that I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window, old ideas. Anybody still have any old ideas? Yes, I still have old ideas all the time. I say, well, why didn't I like that movie? Why didn't I watch that movie? Well, you told yourself you wouldn't like it. Or why didn't I read that book? You told yourself you wouldn't like it. Or, you know, why don't I go to a certain meeting? Well, I told myself I wouldn't like it. And then I go and I said, wow, it was pretty good. And I'm always seeing things you're wrong about. Your old ideas will keep coming up. But now we know that we don't have to act on them. That was not easy. But the moment, here's the deal, the moment he made up my mind, this is really powerful, to go through with the process. So he was going to do it. I had the curious feeling that my alcohol condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. And people can talk about how when you completely gave up, you had that sense of relief. And then once you made that decision to really go through with it, remember in step three, when it says when we make that decision, you know, we feel like we've been relieved of the bondage of self. And it says we have a new employer, and we have peace now, and we're beginning to lose our fear. Quite as important, and this is a true statement that should be read at every meeting, was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. So any problem you have will be solved by the spiritual principles of the steps. All of them. I have since been brought into a way of living more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. So if your life is centered on God and service to God and others, then you're going to have a satisfying and useful life. You're going to have a life of peace and serenity and joy. And the life you had before was centered on you. And what did that get you? Fear, anger, harm to others, decisions based on self that caused you to be harmed. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it even if I could. And a lot of people will say, I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic. They're not grateful for the things they did when they were an alcoholic, but they're grateful that they I can say I'm grateful I'm an alcoholic because it brought me here, it brought me to this book, it brought me to God. And so a lot of good came out of it. It says in Romans, all things that come good. So what I thought was the worst thing that could ever happen to me turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stop there, and so we'll have time. I did pretty good. I have 20 minutes.
Read the last paragraph of 43 while you're there, Mike.
Well, I didn't know if you'd let me. Okay. Okay.
That's a request.
I'm giving. It's good to see you back, Ed. So the whole thing, and I'll read this again next week, but the whole point of the first 43 pages and doctor's opinion is to get you to understand this statement. Once more, the alcoholic, which is you, at certain times, which could be any time, has no effective mental defense, your mind, your thinking, your willpower against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, and always put that in because if not, alcoholics will try to prove it. Neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. I can't get it from you. I can't get it from anybody else. My defense must come from a higher power. And that's why the next chapter is called We Agnostics, Those Without Knowledge of God. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Good job. All right, we're done, and let's open it up.